Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Our thanks to Jerry Dulac for joining us today on the show with great insight on Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown. I mean, great insight. And read Jerry's article tomorrow in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. It's going to open up even more about Antonio Brown. Gave me a different feel and a different thought process on Antonio Brown, what Jerry did today, and I'm anxious to read his story tomorrow in the Post-Gazette. Play-by-play call of the day has to be Brent Musburger. He called last night's Tennessee-Kentucky upset.
Evans gets in now, five on the shot. Williams jump hook, it's good. That'll do it. Tennessee upsets Kentucky. Three of the top four fall. Villanova, Kansas, and now Kentucky on a wild Tuesday night.
He's got one more left in him. It is Georgia and Kentucky next Tuesday night at Rupp Arena. Brent Musburger. You know what? He had an incredible career. As you'll see tonight when they're doing their features on him on ESPN, they'll point out it's not a perfect career, but he had a great career along the way. Yeah, part of that, too, is having opinions. Not everybody agree with his opinions. No? All right. Audrey Snyder, DKSports.com, joins us. Audrey, last Saturday morning, James Franklin had his season-ending press conference. What were the primary takeaways that you had from that session?
You know, with the lead-up to signing day, now we're exactly a week away. I guess by this time next Wednesday, all the letters will be well on their way faxed into State College. So, really, Steve, anything kind of regarding this class to me was really interesting because you look at it, I asked him about Lamont Wade. Obviously, early enrollee, we're allowed fair game to talk about. And he said he wouldn't really go there, wouldn't say what the plan is for Lamont Wade, which, of course, Penn State recruited him as an athlete. They're going to do a whole lot with him. But he did say that he planned to meet with the four early enrollees last week and to just kind of see how they're adjusting to campus. And that, of course, is a big part of that transition for the four new guys. But I also think the scholarship numbers got a lot of talk out of last week, mainly just because people want to know, you know, how many kids can they take in this class. And so they'll probably be around, you know, 21 guys is kind of the number. So then obviously Dylan Rivers then decommits after the weekend. So now they probably have about three spots left. Although I would say at this point, there's probably a pretty decent chance that they would end up saving at least one, if not two, of those spots then for the following recruiting cycle.
Right. He talked about early signing period, which is certainly on a track to be a possibility. What is your opinion on an early signing period?
You know, I think it makes sense, and it's something that we've talked about a lot with James Franklin throughout the last year or two, and he's always kept the same stance on it, and I agree with him on it. It's something where Franklin has always said, you know, he thinks it's right for certain kids. If it's a kid who always knew that he wanted to go to Penn State, is okay with not taking other visits elsewhere, then, you know, have this kid sign, get it over with. That way other coaches can stop calling. Kid can focus on school, his senior season, all that stuff. It also then gives the coaching staff peace of mind because they don't have to worry about continuing to recruit these kids. It's like, hey, we got him. He's locked up. Don't have to worry about it. Now, I think where it gets interesting, Steve, is there's going to have to be some kind of clause written in where if a kid early signs, but then the coaching staff changes, there should be some wiggle room there where the kid could then go to another school because, as we say all the time, I mean, coaches can come and go as they please and do what they want, but obviously it's a little bit different for the kids. So also, what's the prospect giving up? You know, once you sign, all the other visits are off the table. Well, what happens then if a coach leaves and you don't have a plan B because you, you know, already committed to one school? And kids will tell you all the time that they're committing to a place because they're committing to that school, but let's not kid ourselves here. I mean, they're committing to the football program, they're committing to that coaching staff. We see all the time. I mean, how many players, you know, we saw follow Franklin and his staff from Vanderbilt to Penn State. I mean, this is not the exception, this is the norm. So obviously it's going to be really interesting to kind of see when the NCAA votes on this, how they work all that in.
Yeah, because anytime you do something like this, you do have to examine and ask the question right away, what are the unintended consequences? And you just brought up one of the more important ones right there. What are the unintended consequences? Something you didn't really think of. 10th coach, how do you feel about adding a 10th assistant coach for college football?
You know, I think you look at the numbers, Steve, and that's where always, you know, when people look at, especially when you look at Title IX and numbers and what throws that out of whack, well, it's because of football, because you have 85 scholarships. So if you had that many kids, and we're seeing it right now, I mean, this is a long stretch where James Franklin and his assistants are on the road recruiting. So these kids have so much contact with Dwight Gault all throughout the year, where if you had another assistant coach, and I believe Penn State's plans with it, because we asked James about it last season, what I believe he said they would do was take that coach, and right now special teams duties are kind of split up with the coaching staff, and possibly have, you know, one person do that as opposed to having a couple people chip in with it. So, yeah, I mean, you see it right now where these kids are, the staff's out on the road and all these kinds of things. But in season, I mean, I think the whole goal of these kids going to school, obviously, is for the education component, but also they want to be better football players. And what's a better way to do that? Well, getting them more hands-on instruction. So I think you look at the numbers, and based off of that, I think it makes a really, really compelling case to have the extra coach.
Obviously, there are people who are experts on recruiting. I mean, that's why they have the websites that they have. What is the recruiting coverage experience been like for you, because so many people do want to read about it?
It's fascinating, Steve. It really is, and it's something that, you know, I've been looking at it here probably the last 5 or 6 years, and the last, I've been out to the opening now 2 or 3 times, I guess twice, out in Oregon, and that's really where you kind of see everything happen. I mean, those are the best of the best kids out there at the opening, the Elite 11. So you get a really good feel for it, because it is wild. And, you know, we all, especially in this business, we look at numbers, we look at metrics, and the interest is there in recruiting. I mean, this is essentially, you look at free agency and the NFL and all those kinds of things, that's what recruiting has become for college football. You know, fans want to know, you know, what's the next quarterback look like? What's he play like? What is he like off the field? You know, what are the needs that the class has addressed? What do they still fulfill? And it's interesting, too, when you're, you know, dealing with these kids, interacting with them, you find out right away some of them are super media savvy and they've been doing this now for 2 or 3 years, even though they're still in high school, whereas other kids are just your typical, you know, 17, 18-year-old, and they kind of fumble through answers and stuff, which, I mean, you expect because they're kids. So really, it's interesting to see how the kids handle it, how the parents handle it. And we'll see all of that front and center next Wednesday, you know, when they finally fax the letters in. And then right away, I mean, the focus is on 2018 kids. That's one of the things that always interests me is as soon as this class is in and they're signed next Wednesday, fans then want to know about 18. They don't care about these kids being bottom of the depth chart because they're already here. They just want to know, okay, well, who are they targeting in 18? Who can they hold on to? You know, who's looking elsewhere? All that kind of stuff.
When you went out there, was there anything that you didn't expect that surprised you?
You know, you hear it's so crazy, and the first time I went out there was James Franklin had just started at Penn State, so it was that summer. So I guess at that point he'd been there for maybe 5 or 6 months. So at that point, Brandon Wimbush was the quarterback pledge at Penn State. Was after, of course, he ends up going to Notre Dame. But just kind of the hype surrounding these kids, I mean, the parents very much treat this as a business. You know, you're out there, and one of the things that still sticks with me, and this had to be, you know, at least 4 or 5 years ago at this point, maybe three or four years, this parent that I was just, you know, having small talk with was yelling at her son not to have a conversation during a drill with another kid, because if this kid beats her son in this position drill, he's then going to get more notice from all, you know, the writers who are there covering this event. So that kid's going to then get more publicity. He's going to get more scholarship offers, which is then going to give him a better opportunity in college. And this kid is then going to take her son's spot in the NFL. And I'm standing there like, okay, this, you know, your son's like a 17-year-old wide receiver. Like, this is a little much. But this is how some of the more extreme parents kind of think of these things, you know, and everybody thinks their kid's the best, and I understand that. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, this is sports. Like, let the kids have some fun, and if they're really that good, someone is going to find them, you know, with all the services out there these days and Huddle film. I mean, everybody has a highlight tape right now. So, yeah, it's an eye-opener.
Sounds like a girls' figure skating camp. With the parents hanging around like that.
I don't know. See, figure skating camp might be a little more interesting. It gets very, very heated. And, you know, then you come across some of the parents that are just fantastic and they get it. But, yeah, it is.
What's that show out of Pittsburgh? Dance Moms? Something like that.
Right? I'm not up on it, but I have heard of Dance Moms.
I've heard of it. But, well, I don't know. I can't explain it. I've heard of it.
I thought that was right in your wheelhouse, Steve. I'm a little disappointed.
Well, then I'm proud to extremely disappoint you on that. okay, so now National 11 Tent Day comes up. What's usually your plan of attack on a day like that?
Just trying to survive it. No. you know, usually it's nice because we've kind of gotten into a rhythm here with James Franklin's staff. They've kind of kept the same routine, which for us is nice because you know what to expect. And I know James Franklin will speak next Wednesday afternoon, hold his press conference, and the recruiting coordinators will both be available. So that's always a good chance to pick their brain and kind of see where these kids figure in at. But I'm sure I'll be up early in the morning, you know, because you want to be able to get the live file rolling on our website. And, you know, as soon as those letters come in, of course, Penn State tweets them out. And then we all take the information, take our stats, and get that to the readers. So I'll probably get an early start on it.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure if Penn State, I would imagine they're still going to do their stuff in the war room like they've done in years past, which mm-hmm. is a pretty cool scene.
Yeah.
If so, if that's going on, I'll head over there, check that out, and then press conference in the afternoon. And, you know, you're always trying to look ahead, Steve, and see, you know, which one of these kids has the possibility of seeing the field right away, or how many of these kids could play right away. What needs did this class not address, you know? And right now it's about how can they close this class and will they get another linebacker? Right now, to me, that's kind of the pressing thing. So mm-hmm. it'll be a busy day next Wednesday, but it's also a lot of fun because you get to talk football and it almost feels like a game day even though you're in February. So always good.
Audrey, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time and also for your insight.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, Steve. Take care.
Audrey Snyder, DKSports.com. Final half hour, Neil Coulong on the Steelers. We'll come back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When you're looking for a new Ford vehicle in Central PA, there's only one dealer with four city blocks of new Fords. It's Sunbury Motors Ford. SMC is where you want to be with over 90 new F-150s priced from just $24,824. See for yourself why Sunbury Motors has sold over 40,000 trucks. Sunbury Motors Ford has over 70 new Ford SUVs in stock with 2017 Ford Escapes on sale from only $19,880. SMC has 45 new Ford cars with Ford Fiestas starting as low as $13,975. Plus, financing as low as 0% for up to 72 months on select models. You deserve to deal with the best. Sunbury Motors Ford. SMC is the dealer voted best in the Valley Reader's Choice for best car dealership, best body shop, and best quick service. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. SMC, satisfying more customers since 1915.
Okay, Sean was explaining the Dance Moms concept to me during the break. God, I'm old.
Yeah, who'd have thought? I did not expect you and Audrey Snyder talking about Dance Moms and it's the reality TV show that's on Lifetime, where Abby Lee Miller, based out in Pittsburgh, she's got a dance studio that she runs out in Penn Hills. And, you know, little girls, grade school, middle school, you know, they form this dance troupe. They go to competitions. Well, I thought the show was going to get canceled a few years ago when the story hit the fan about Abby Lee Miller trying to hide $750,000 of income and, you know, skip on paying her taxes. But show is popular and still on.
Well, did you hear this story? The feds in Boston are investigating, what the heck is it now? They're investigating this money laundering scheme. And they go to Westboro, Massachusetts. And they arrested a Brazilian man in connection with a multi-billion dollar global fraud. That's what they're investigating. And they find a suitcase with $2.2 million in it. They then open up the box spring under the mattress and find $20 million stashed in the box spring. Can you believe that?
There's movie plot written all over it.
They were investigating Telex Free Incorporated's $3 billion global fraud case. See, her $750,000 seems like change compared to that.
So what Ocean's movie are we up to now? Ocean's 13? Get Danny Ocean on that. 13 be the next
one? 11's the only one I watched. And I liked it. I mean, it wasn't that I didn't like it. I liked it. So, I liked it. So not as if I didn't like it and go, oh, the heck with that. I didn't watch the others. It just turned out I didn't watch the others.
All-star cast.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know how much they paid out in salaries on that one, but, yeah, it was an all-star cast. I'm glad you explained the Dance Moms thing to me.
Dance Moms made its way into the show. When I woke up this morning, I did not expect that.
Who would? Who would expect Dance Moms to make the cut on this show? Well, look, she's talking about parents of these things. Right, and then I mentioned figure skating moms. I said, well, I heard of the show Dance Moms. I figured it had to be somewhat of the same concept. Like it is.
Yeah, there's like a rotation of like half a dozen to eight or so dance moms, and they all take their turn taking their shots at Abby. Hey, it's my time for my kid to have the solo in the competition here. So, yeah. So you get your weaving, interchanging storylines.
I bet Lawrence doesn't talk about this stuff. He's sitting back saying, thank goodness.
Part of pop culture. You know, it's a popular show for a lot of people.
Yeah, sure, if you insist, yeah.
It's not for you and me.
Oof. I tell you,
my wife doesn't watch every single episode, but there's a few times I've caught her binge watching it. I'll get home from work, and then at that point, I'll just gravitate to the kitchen.
Okay.
Grab my iPad and watch a show on there.
Yeah. Okay. You insist. Okay. All right. So it's basketball last night. Penn State lost.
Great first half, though. Hung tough. Looked good.
Hung tough. But you know what really bothered Dick and me about it last night? Is that, you know, they shot really well in the first half, and they're down three. And that was the problem. They shot really well. They were down three. Usually you shoot that well, and you're up. See my point? That's what bothered us, is that they shot the ball really well, and they were still down three. Now, they were down 10. Shep Garner hit a big three-pointer, kind of turned it around for them. The last 12 minutes of the first half, they played really, really well. But they've got to get going in a couple of areas here. I mean, let's get serious about where they are. They are not really in the, they are in a spot where I thought they would be record-wise at this stage. I'm not surprised by this. When I looked at the schedule and I saw Purdue and Wisconsin back-to-back, my first thought was, that's bad. This is back in October. I said, that, for a young team, is a bad back-to-back. And because I didn't like, you have to play them at some point. You're at Purdue and then you're at Wisconsin, but it's back-to-back. So you see 32,000 fans total in a span of 72 hours against the two best teams in the Big Ten at their place. So Penn State now has Illinois coming up Saturday here, 50-50 game. At Indiana next Wednesday. I believe even there that's a 50-50 game. Rutgers here. And then Maryland's a 50-50 game as well here. So we've got three of the next four here. So now this is the defining four-game section of the season for Penn State, in my opinion, in basketball this year. Look, this is a 65-game proposition. Scoop is going to be together in toto next year. And I always feel that, and I go back to the Taylor Battle era. Taylor Battle, when Jamel Cornley got hurt and Gary Claxton got hurt, Battle, as a freshman, helped lead Penn State to five consecutive home wins to close that season. That really set the tone for what they were about to do in two of the next 3 years, winning the NIT and then eventually getting to the NCAA tournament. And it started by confidence winning at home.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
On this show, we use simple language because that's all I can handle. I guess my sports bozo of the day yesterday, I guess our ratings in Beijing dropped.
Oh, no.
Oh, kind of like I kind of felt as a badge of honor. My goodness. All right. Time now for the sports bozo of the day. Soup must have done something, right? Well, guess what? The Poinsettia Bowl is out.
Oh, man.
San Diego Bowl Game Association says it's dropping the San Diego County Credit Union Poinsettia Bowl. And now they're talking about moving the Holiday Bowl to Petco Park. Just in case the city closes down Qualcomm Stadium after 2018.
That's a good question. I was wondering if they would tear the whole thing down.
Well, they're going to have to do something because San Diego State plays there. So, I mean, the Chargers are not the only tenant there. But the Poinsettia Bowl is now out. So now we're down one bowl game.
So now we're at 39, right? We're losing,
39.
We're losing the even number of 40.
Yes. The funny thing is the last two of them were two I'll watch that game. Just means somebody else will pick up the... We'll pick up the matchup somewhere else, but still. And, I think that's... So the Poinsettia Bowl is out. I doubt they're going to replace it. I doubt they'll look at, for example, like Little Rock and Austin and Myrtle Beach all want games. I think Charleston, South Carolina wants a game. So there's four of them that want games. I doubt they're going to replace it. So the Poinsettia Bowl goes bye-bye. It is out. So, see all your complaints about too many bowl games, Sean. Did I win that one this year, or did my brother?
What's that?
The Poinsettia Bowl.
I can look it up. I got the papers here.
Yeah, look it up. I want to see if it was worth keeping.
the suit actually just walked into the room. Did you pick the poinsettia? Who did you pick for
Probably
the poinsettia bowl?
I picked most of them right.
Let's see. Poinsettia bowl was BYU, Wyoming. BYU, me. BYU, Kevin. BYU, suit. Steve, you picked Wyoming.
Well, then, the bowl's a piece of junk. Dump it. It's out.
Gone.
Yeah, it is gone. I mean, that's it. We're finished with it. Okay? Poinsettia bowl off the table. No longer there. So the suit just walked in.
Yes.
All done with digital media for the day. I mean, I know, like, with my job, I keep going.
He says his day is still going as well.
What are we doing? Clean the bathroom? What are we doing?
Yeah, spare hour before the Shick-Seelens Grove game tonight. 7:09 airtime here on WKOK tonight.
Ah, Dave Ritchie with the call. Looking forward to it. Is there anybody working with him?
As far as I know.
Setting up equipment, engineering. He's got that look on his face, doesn't he?
The chief is in charge of carrying in the extension cord. I've been a witness
to
that.
Right now. Okay. The chief should just worry about announcing the game.
Okay. He's in charge with the big orange spool and the banner.
Some people are in the category of talent. That is chief. All right. Check in now with Neil Coulong. And by the way, the suit's there. Have you been pacing back and forth about the Roethlisberger thing?
No, the key words here are find a quarterback, because you're going to need one anyway, whether he stays or goes.
Well, there aren't any available. You're dead.
Landry Jones is not what give me a warm and fuzzy feeling.
He speaks highly of you. All right, so let's bring in Neil Coulong now, and we'll turn our attention to somebody who knows what he's talking about. Neil, welcome. Great to have you with us. So what's your thought on how this whole thing played out? It's great to have you with us, by the way.
Yeah, it is. Maybe I will retire now.
I gave you that great build-up, and all of a sudden there's nothing.
I was all set for it. That was just perfect.
I'm thinking to myself, this isn't working. All right, so let's get, it seems like from a common sense point of view, what Ben Roethlisberger said today about evaluating his future, at least common sense-wise, seemed to make sense to me. What about you?
I agree. I think it's revealing in the sense that he's saying it publicly, but I'm roughly Roethlisberger's age, and I would think, just looking at what he's going through and how long he's been in the league, the fact that he has a family, you almost kind of think that these guys think something along those lines every year. I mean, you've got to be into this 100%, and to go through as frustrating a loss as that was, looking at the roster top to bottom, where you are in terms of your health and your career, it's certainly reasonable to expect that he's going to weigh every option that he has. You know, he's not enslaved by the NFL. He doesn't have to do this. And, him providing some, giving himself some opportunity for self-reflection, I think, is a good idea. That said, I don't think there's, a very strong chance at all that he will retire, but for him to consider it, I think it's attention worthy, just because it's like, wow, Roethlisberger is kind of getting up to that age now. That's kind of an odd thought, but overall, I don't think there's really anything to it outside of, perhaps a pang or two of bitterness and frustration after a really bad game, and a veteran quarterback who's getting up there in years.
The last 15 games where he has been the starting quarterback against a top 10 rated defense, the Steelers are 6-9. Now, this doesn't always have to do with everything he's doing, but also his completion percentage is not very high in those games either. How much of a concern is that?
It's hard to play it out, because for me, you've seen the Steelers at their best, typically against, non-high level defenses. I don't think many teams can put up 40 points against the best defenses in the NFL. But that's where kind of the legend is born, you know, the power of the triplets that they have, the killer bees. They put up all these numbers against competition that might not exactly be the best, and I think that gets drawn out more when they get completely shut down against a team like New England. Now, at the same time, where this really gets kind of murky is the fact that you just don't get all three of them on the field for big games very often. The first time they played the Patriots, Ben was out. The second time, Bell had five carries before he went out with an injury that he apparently had this whole time. I'm not entirely sure that's the case, but whatever it is, you just haven't gotten all of them on the field consistently enough. And adding the fourth one, what about Martavis Bryant? I guarantee right. you the Patriots can't do a lot of what they did if somebody like Bryant and not Kobe Hamilton is on the other side of Brown. There's so much more that they can do as an offense, but really what we're going to end up writing this era of Steelers football is it's the kind of, you know, forgotten, the offense that just didn't get on the field. It's mythical when you put them all out there. It's just there have been so few instances of it over the last 2.5 seasons that you wonder, all this individual talent that they have, are they ever going to be able to fully utilize all of it over a consistent period of time? If they do, I honestly think that it's a Super Bowl championship level team, simply because you're just not going to be able to stop all of them on offense. And from there, it's whichever defense can get a stop or two. The Steelers should have good enough of a defense, at least I thought that Saturday before the game, to be able to do that. And to some degree, we've seen that. But overall, they just haven't put the whole product together. And a lot of it really just comes down to character issues, selfish decisions, selfish choices that have divided the football team. And with that, it's hard to say that they will win. You know, you just don't know week to week what you're going to get anymore.
Obviously, between what Richard Sherman did last year and then what the Patriots did the other night, you can take Antonio Brown out of the game. I mean, you can do it. For some reason, you couldn't take Jerry Rice out, but Antonio Brown, you can. When I look at the Falcons, Mohamed Sanu, to me, is, you know, I look at him and say, now there's a difference maker there, because they're going to try and do that to Julio Jones. How badly do the Steelers need a balance on the other side from Brown?
I think that's exactly it. And your comparison to Rice is spot on. But one thing that Rice had, one, was a complimentary receiver who could exploit that kind of coverage.
John
and frankly,
Taylor.
The Steelers, the Steelers haven't had that. I've said that on your show before. The offense is a house of cards. They don't have any other receiving options outside of Antonio Brown. And I know the Steelers fans love Eli Rogers and they love Jesse James. These are not big-time players. And we saw that. They shrunk as small as they possibly could, with the exception of James to a certain degree, in the spotlight of that big game. Sammy Coates dropped a huge pass, in my opinion, as negative as this sounds. The game was over after that. It was like, if you aren't going to make that play, if you're going to make that mistake this early in the game, it's over. Just forget it, because you don't have many opportunities. That ball had to be caught. He couldn't do it. Hamilton dropped the pass. There just weren't enough other difference-making options on the field. So for Brown to suggest that Brown can be taken away, any player can ultimately be taken away. But in the past, the Steelers have made teams pay for selling out to take care of one player, like Seattle did last year. They gave up 200 yards to Marcus Wheaton and allowed 31 points at home. So it's not as if it's always going to come down to Brown, but they absolutely need to have that second receiver. And if it's not Martavis Bryant, they're going to have to draft one. They're going to have to find yet another receiver to fill in and create a second option, because you have to have at least two of them now if you want to continue where you're going. It should be pick your poison. That's an ideal offense, and that's exactly why the Falcons signed Sanu. Sanu is not a high-level player, but he tore the Packers apart in the first quarter. And it wasn't until, you know, Julio Jones started yelling at Kyle Shanahan to get him the ball more that he blew up and they ran the Packers out of the building. That's an offense that will succeed against just about anybody, because they have multiple options and they're able to use all of them. The Steelers had no depth down the stretch. They really didn't. For them to have done what they did, it was all on the running game. Their passing game had no depth whatsoever, and we just didn't realize that until the Patriots game.
Yeah, I feel the Steelers are the second best AFC team, but when Derek Carr is healthy, might be the third best AFC team. So when you look at the offseason free agent followed by draftless, positionally, what has to be positionally the priorities in free agency then draft?
That's really funny. I've been saying almost the same thing since 2013.
Yeah,
they need to find
a
long-term answer at edge rusher. They don't have that. I think they can expand their scheme a little bit more to perhaps look into a true seven technique defensive end. I wouldn't put that past the scheme that they have. When you're drafting in the first round, 30th overall, marquee positions probably aren't going to be as plentiful as you would like. And you get down that far, you're kind of looking at, you know, maybe two down defensive linemen, real raw project pass rushers. But as much as Bud Dupree kind of tantalized the imaginations of Steelers fans, I didn't see anything from him on Sunday to suggest that all of a sudden now he's going to take over next year. When you legitimately have to bring back James Harrison for another season, which I think that's the position they're in, you've got to find somebody that's a stronger option than Arthur Motes, Jarvis Jones, or Anthony Ciccolo. That's really what their options are for next season right now. That's pretty bleak. To me, you've got to find somebody that can create pressure in a multitude of ways, and I don't mean a three-down player. Somebody that can specialize in getting after the passer. Outside of that, you look at it from a financial perspective, a rookie or second year left guard, somebody that you can develop to start next season, in place for Ramon Foster to kind of, you know, knock the salary cap number for the offensive line down a little bit, might be ideal, especially if you're drafting at 30, but, you're going to have to look at a wide receiver. You don't know what you're going to get from Martavis Bryant. In fact, he did an interview, I think it was with Monday Morning Quarterback on, Sports Illustrated recently. His comments were kind of startling in a way. It was very, I do what I do, and this is what I'm going to do, and, you know, fine, whatever happens, happens. It really wasn't as apologetic in tone as it felt like in the past. He's got a massive risk. They're going to be all over. He's going to get a drug test more often than James Harrison will next season. So he's got to be completely on the straight and narrow, and he needs to come in and produce to show that he can be that second guy. And this is all assuming that they even want to keep Antonio Brown around. You know, you have to wonder to what degree are the Rooneys going to want to say, look, you know what, this is getting to be too much. He didn't show up in this game. He's a great player. We're going to have to pay him a ton of money. You have to be realistic and think they're going to take a look at a trade. And with the number that he has in terms of his contract heading into 2017 and the need for an extension, they might get some value back from that trade. It's crazy, but you have to kind of admit that, you know, they're going to want to look into that before they're going to sign him to what he probably wants in a $15 million a year contract.
Wow. Interesting, Neil. Very interesting. Thanks so much. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Wow. Neil Kulong, informative as always. Did the suit have any final comments, for example, on IndyCar racing that we can use in the show? Or
believe it or not, the topic was not brought up. Kind of surprised.
Feel like we dodged another one. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. All right, a little bit of fun here at the end. Golf Magazine did a poll of 3,800 American golfers. 18 questions for 18 holes. Here we go. In your ideal round, you are walking 64%, 36% ride. I'll do a bit of both. If you have time for one, your pre-round warm-up is driving range putting green. Driving range, 153%. When it comes to rules you play, by the book 60% or the way the suit wants to play 40%. Fast and loose with the suit, I'm telling you. If you could choose to go to one or the other, the Masters or the Ryder Cup, what would you go to? 81% said the Masters. Your greatest golfer of all time, Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus. Jack Nicklaus, 62%. With driver in hand, you prefer to tee it high, 70%, versus 30% tee it low. If you can carry one club or the other, hybrid, 81%, 3-iron, 19%. I'd actually would rather carry the 3-iron. You'd rather drive it as long as Dustin Johnson or as accurate as Zach Johnson? Zach Johnson, 151%. I'd go with that one, too. Number nine, if you could get a lesson from one person, would it be from Butch Harmon, 74%, or Hank Haney, 26%? Soup, by the way, came in at 1% from the Slicers. Your dream destination for golf is Scotland, the winner, 70%, Ireland, 30%. From the apron, do you putt or hit a wedge? 70%, like me, would use the putter. During a round, you're boozing, 24%, abstaining, 76%. Your cell phone policy, 73%, put it in the bag. That's what I do. I put mine in the bag. 13% in the car, 14% in the pocket. I never put it in my pocket. Ideal number of holes, 18 wins at 72%, 36 holes, 25%, 3%, 9 holes. In most rounds, you prefer to tee it forward, 65%, or play from the tips, 35%. I tee it forward. Most iconic par 3 in America, two really great ones, but they pick Bell, number 12 at Augusta, 70%, number 7 at Pebble Beach with the Pacific Ocean in the background, 30%. Number 17, when facing a risky approach to a par 5, you're likely to go for it or lay up. I go for it. 36%, I'm in that group. 64% will lay up. And the biggest question of all, at the turn, what do you grab? 7% say they grab a wheatgrass smoothie. I am not playing around with those people. 24% grab a burger, or like me, you grab a hot dog, 68%. It's January, why not? Usain Bolt stripped of his gold medal in the relay. Because one of the relay guys evidently tested positive. Now, this is from the 2008 Olympics. It took 8 years to get the sample? 8 years? It's just been sitting on a counter somewhere? What? Oh, it's a bizarro world. 8 years later, we'll strip Usain Bolt of his gold medal because another guy in the relay tested positive. 8 years. They just forget to ask him? What? The Olympics. Fraud.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.